mail call.
It's a Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
All right, Killer Bees broadcasting live from 2012 Rusk inside of Cobos Q in Edo, where the parade party has flowed over right here inside of Cobos Q. Great food, great drinks. Swing on by, hang out with us, and enjoy a celebration Monday afternoon. And today's championship parade special live broadcast presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. The Houston Astros are your World Series champs, and Academy Sports and Outdoors has everything you need to celebrate. Swing by your local Academy store today or shop online to find officially licensed jerseys, tees, caps, and more. It's our Mailbag Monday Astro Edition. You can ask us whatever you want. Has to pertain to the Astros today since they won the World Series on Saturday. Let's go out to the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Roy's got a question for the Killer Bees. Roy, what's your question for the Killer Bees?
The question is, you think Verlander will stay for less money?
I think Roy asked us,
Will Verlander stay for less money?
Verlander has a player option for $25 million next year. So Justin Verlander can make that decision anytime he wants. Justin Verlander is capable of opting in to his deal with the Houston Astros. Nobody expects him to do that. They expect him to opt out and probably cash in between low-end 30, high-end 37, 38.
He's
for like 2 years,
money,
maybe plus one.
43. I don't think he gets that high.
I haven't heard anybody say that he's looking for the Scherzer money, but we've also seen him be very competitive with other pitchers in the market and how much money he wants to get. Jim Crane, he was on video. I believe it was Ari Alexander who had it.
Yep.
That said, look, Justin Verlander is my first call that I make Monday morning, maybe even Sunday morning.
He said tomorrow, which was Sunday.
Yeah, so Sunday morning, first call that I make. Those two have a very tight relationship. They like each other a lot. I believe that Jim Crane wants Justin Verlander to be with the Houston Astros forever. I think he wants him to finish his career with the Houston Astros. So I think that they ultimately will come to terms, figure something out, but it's not going to be cheap. Justin Verlander is not going to take less to be a Houston Astro.
No, I don't think he is. I think it's a business decision, but I will say this. What I really, really like is the fact that you could see and hear it come through in the interviews, both him and Kate, how much they love Houston, how much they have really appreciated their time here. But then as it went deeper, Verlander talking about what that clubhouse has been like, what those teammates have been like, what that family atmosphere has been like, and because he was going through some quote-unquote hard times in the playoffs, how much he even said about Dusty. Like, I never even knew Dusty because by the time they hired Dusty, I was going through Tommy John, and all of a sudden I had to get to know him. He goes, and we've had some great conversations in his office, just the two of us. I've grown to really love Dusty. And I think that all those things, not that they're going to make anything change dollar for dollar, but I think that they've kind of factored in and weighed in a little bit more than maybe he felt like. He said since his daughter was born, too, he's kind of had a different mentality, and it's changed some things. I think the biggest thing that's going to factor in is wherever he goes, he wants to win, and he knows right now the way this team is set up, he can continue to win at a very high clip to chase 300 wins and some of the things he wants individually.
300 matters to him,
yep.
And getting wins easier with the Astros than like 99% of the league. Astros win at a high rate. Dodgers win at a high rate. Yankees maybe win at a high rate. I'm not sure that Verlander wants to play there. Crane loves him. Crane loves Justin Verlander.
And they're buddies. Like, you know, I said even before we had his brother on or anybody else, this is going to be decided without James Click. This is going to be decided on the golf course or two buddies talking it out on a cell phone. And I think that Jim Crane expects that he's going to have a really honest, truthful conversation. Verlander's not going to pull the wool over anybody's eyes or pull a Beltran and leave just last minute when you weren't expecting it and blindside you. This is something they're going to discuss, and he's going to know right away where Verlander's coming from.
Click might not be with the organization.
True.
So, like, that's the other
part
of it.
Though he did give him his props on the podium.
He also did not announce a deal before the parade today. Just saying. I think that Crane could even do something that doesn't make sense for the direction of the club if it means keeping Verlander here. So I think Verlander is going to be an Astro. That's my favorite. That's my betting favorite to land Justin Verlander.
But at a higher price.
But I don't think Verlander is going to be handing out like multi-million dollar discounts either. 713-780-ESPN. Ask the Killer Bees anything on our Mailbag Monday. 713-780-ESPN. 5798. Blankers, will you finally commit to getting a Brian Abreu jersey?
If you buy it for me, I'll wear it.
Would I buy it for you?
Not you. Whoever asked the question.
I was about to say.
I mean, you don't buy me anything. I just, to me, look, I always said it wasn't about hating on Brian Abreu. It's rare to see a guy that has the kind of talent that he has. The fastball is one thing. The secondary pitch is another. And it was after seeing Josh James and how much all of y'all that have been loyal to me over the years knows how much it frustrated me to no end about how Josh James wasn't able to figure it out. I didn't want Brian Abreu to be the next Josh James. He has proven everything that I was worried about to be things of the past. And I've given him his flowers all playoffs long and validated on Twitter every single time. I am proud papa. That is my son. And Brian Abreu is a real factor going forward for this team.
I think he's your daddy, actually. I think it's the other way
around.
No,
that's not true. Although he's a large man.
He's a big man. 713-780-ESPN. Ask us anything. Our mailbag Monday. Jordan, my question for the Bees, does Dusty go into the Hall of Fame with an Astros jersey on his bust?
No. He's going in as a manager, right? But, look, he's won what – I think he set the record for, divisional titles with five different teams. And I think he might have taken all five to a championship series.
I think he took all of the playoffs.
Except for Cincinnati. But, you know, he's done a ton of great things. If he goes in as just a manager, obviously he's going to be, you know, in high regard. But, you know, sample sizes are everything, too. I don't know how that works, but if he wears that Astros hat, I think it's great.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be a Giants. He won over 1,500 games with the Giants. I think Giants will be the one that he goes. Kirsten has a question for the Killer Bees, even though it breaks our rules with our Astro-specific mailbag.
But it is Kirsten, so it's Monday. Okay.
She's saying, how much are the Cougs going to win by? Their opening tip to the season is tonight. Number three team in the country. I'm calling the game, so I'm going to back out of this conversation.
Who are they playing?
Northern Colorado.
Northern
Who can score? They got a good offense.
Colorado.
Good offense.
I'm going to say Cougs by 17 because they're working out. They're still, you know, getting everything worked out. So it's not going to be a massive blowout. I'll say Cougs by 17.
I'll do the whole Kirk Herbstreit.
Yeah, do
back
it.
Back up, little Homer Simpson, back myself
wow.
into the.
It'll be Kelvin's 700th career win.
Yeah.
What a great career. That's awesome. That is fantastic. That's my dude and your dude.
Yeah, 700 tonight perhaps. 713-780-ESPN, our Mailbag Monday Astros edition. 3364, will Joel change his moniker on Twitter to Astro Man Joel now?
No. No. I mean, I am who I am, but I love the Astros, and everybody knows that's my baseball team. My Astros moniker my Twitter moniker doesn't have to do that to validate it. If you listen to the show daily, you know exactly where my allegiance and heart lies.
Brother Bearer, Mailbag Monday, just left a client's office who is a big Yankees fan. She's okay with Judge leaving because he doesn't bat 1,000 in the postseason. I don't think the Astros fan base will get to this level of absurdity. Us against the world. Aside from Mike Fiers, do y'all recall a player Astro fans wanted to get rid of immediately after the season ended?
There's one pitcher that became a country music singer that was just like everyone could not stand him in the locker room.
George Strait used to pitch for the Astros?
No, he was at the game the other night. I'll think of it. But even Lance and John have talked about like this guy by the media, by even his own teammates in a lot of ways. This dude was just completely despised. But other than that.
Like how long ago?
I think probably like after 2000.
Oh, I didn't realize Brett Myers was a country singer.
Brett Myers. Yeah.
I knew Brett Myers.
That's exactly
was,
who it was. He pitched for the Indians too, right? Yeah, were the Indians?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Brett Myers. He was not a very popular fellow.
Yeah, he was hated. I didn't realize he turned into a country singer, though.
Yeah. I was able to bring knowledge your way. And I don't think Jeff Kent was very much loved, but he was a good player.
Yeah, Jeff Kent was really good. I don't think anybody, but like from an Astro fan base point of view, I don't think that anybody really wanted Jeff Kent to leave. I don't think many people really knew too much about
they
Brett
wanted
Myers
to stay off
in the
dirt
clubhouse.
Bike.
Yeah. The only one that comes to mind for me is actually one that happened in season. That was Ken Giles. Like everybody hated him. Yeah. Everybody couldn't stand him, blowing game after game, ERA like of 100. That's the one that I remember, but that was of course not in season.
Well, no,
that was in season.
No, but remember at the end of the season, after as bad as he was during the playoffs, they're celebrating in the locker room, and he wears the tank top that says zero F's given, and it's like, dude, you've been like hot dog snot during the playoffs, and that's what you're gonna wear? Yeah, you're right. When they finally went to get rid of him, especially when he cussed out AJ on the mound, yeah, no one had any love for Ken Giles.
And he was punching himself in the face. He was so bad that they traded him for a dude who was beating up his girlfriend. 713-780-ESPN. It's facts. I mean, it's not a hot take. It's a fact. 713-780-3776, our Mailbag Monday Astro Edition. Ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. She's got to pertain to the Astros. Katie Burner phone. Good to hear from you, Katie Burner phone. Do y'all believe Click can fleece a couple of teams by trading Joel's bestie, Josh James and Forrest Whitley. Some owners may think the Astros are getting rid of Jules since many of the other prospects worked out. Here's news for you, KD. It might not be James Click. In fact, if I had to guess, I don't think James Click's going to be the general manager of the Houston Astros maybe by tomorrow. I don't think it's going to happen.
I think Crane had said sometime this week he would have some announcements.
He was going to meet with him Monday morning.
Okay. I don't think he's going to be long for looking for a job either. I think there's going to be another team that will hire him and try to hire him fairly quickly because he didn't do a bad job here. But it's also a very, very different set of circumstances. And dealing with every owner, it's different. But Jim Crane has a certain way about him and expects certain things out of his employees. Evidently, from what I've heard and people I've talked to, that you know he doesn't exactly play Crane ball the way Crane would like sometimes. So,
well, I mean, he's flat out rejecting trades that Click got done.
I think that the team will not have to look long to find his replacement if he leaves. I think that he will not have to look long to have another job.
My feeling is that if they did indeed meet this morning, like was reported, that if there was going to be a deal done, they would have done it before the parade. And that if they didn't do it before the parade, it's one of those things, let's enjoy what we've done together. Let's go celebrate this, and we handle this after the fact. That's my read on it. Maybe I'm wrong. I like James Click. I think James Click's a really good general manager. That's not to say I don't think that the Astros could do better.
People said they didn't see him at the parade. I saw him on one of the vehicles in the midst of a bunch of like players and stuff. So
really,
I'm pretty sure he was there.
I was working during the parade. Curious that
so was
that.
I, but I can multitask.
713-780-ESPN, our mailbag Monday. Question for the Killer Bees Astros edition. 713-780-3776. Didn't Crane's kind of snub Click on the podium after the game? I didn't see that.
I don't think so. He gave credit to, I think he called him James, but James and his entire staff and all the guys that did everything in the baseball analytics department. So he gave him, you know, their props. I don't think that he shunned them.
I did notice one person snub Click. Who was the dude that did the emceeing, the reward ceremony? I forget his name.
Kevin Burkhart.
Click went to shake his hand after he interviewed him, and Burkhart didn't see it and just completely.
I saw that too.
that was pretty funny. Top destination for JV if he doesn't sign back with Houston, and would you be willing to let him walk and spend the money on two solid bats? I said this in August that I would be willing to do that because the Astros have six other pitchers aside from Justin Verlander under club control that are all very good. You can make the case that it's better to spend those resources on bats, left field DH, first base.
Where's he going if he goes?
Top destination if he leaves Houston. My guess on this is actually the New York Mets.
I think it's a good call. I would say, especially since New York newspapers were hinting that the Yankees should go get him, and I think the sleeper would be the Dodgers. I think that the Dodgers are never afraid to spend money, and they've had a lot of injuries in their starting pitching. I could see them with Kate Upton, you know, and everything with the L.A. lifestyle. I could see them going after Justin Verlander.
I can tell you this, not Philadelphia. 713-780-ESPN, Killer Bees broadcasting live inside of Cobo's Q, the aftermath of the parade. It is busy in here. Come hang out with us. Have a nice bite. Have a nice drink. We'll be here until 3. Wilhouse will take over at 3 o'clock. We've gotten this far and haven't talked about the World Series MVP. Jeremy Pena. How about his legacy after this postseason? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, Corey's not only the president of the company, he's also the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association, which means he has the trust and the belief amongst his peers that he is an expert and knows what he's doing. That's who you need when you have anything going on with your house. They do simple home repairs and other things as well, like putting a fence in your yard, but their specialty is obviously roofing. Whether you have a leaky roof or need a new roof on your home, your business, your commercial project, there's only one place to call. It's Fitz Roofing. They are the best in the business. See all the services they offer at FITZroofing.com. Better yet, call them because they do what most other roofing companies don't do. They do free, no-obligation inspections, and it costs you absolutely nothing. They come to you, they do what they do, and you don't have to pay a cent to figure out how they would fix what you have going on. All you do is call them, 832-521-3001. They will be there at your door, and they will not charge you a cent, and they will tell you how they would fix what's going on. So check them out today and realize they have the best warranties in the business, they have the best products in the business, starting with CertainTeed Shingles, and they also have the best ratings in the business, Facebook Home Advisor and otherwise. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. They're good people that will take care of you. They're Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
There's a new buzz in middays.
Blankers let us know it's his 8th year anniversary today. Everybody's congratulating you. Lisa's the one that deserves the congratulations. I know what a year feels like with you, and that's only 3 hours a day. Could you imagine 8 years, 12 hours a day with Blankers?
I believe the word you're looking for is bliss.
Congratulated,
that's what
or
it would be. It would be straight bliss.
Check out the Killer Bees with Joe Blank and Jeremy Branham. Weekdays noon to 3 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's the 3-2. Swing and a high fly ball center field. Driving back, Rodriguez racing back, looking up. That ball's gone. Jeremy Pena blasting one out of here for Houston. And here in the 18th inning, we finally have a run in the ball game.
I feel like at this stage of the season, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a rookie or not. You just got to go out and perform. You know, that's what we
did. And fires, and it swung on and hit high in the air to deep left field. Going to back is Cabrera, and this ball is gone. Jeremy Pena.
I mean, shout out to these guys. You know, these guys kept me within myself, you know, in preparation every single day.
Pena lifts one in the air to left field. It's hit pretty well. Schwarber's back at the wall, and we'll watch it go. Jeremy Pena lofts one into the seats in left for a home run, and the Astros go on top 2-1.
One more trophy to hand out, the Willie Mays Most Valuable Player presented by Chevrolet. Can we have Jeremy Pena? Right here. That's all yours.
Jeremy Pena, the World Series MVP, following up his ALCS MVP. Performance. Killer Bees broadcasting live, 2012 Rusk, Cobos Q, and Edo, as every Astro fan is carrying on the celebration from the parade. This is the after party spot. Good times are having right now inside of Cobos Q. Good fight, good drink. This is the spot to hang out.
Boy, this place, as soon as the parade was over, everybody, smart people, knew exactly where to go. This place filled up in a heartbeat.
It did.
I mean, you can't miss. I believe you guys know I'm a quesadilla connoisseur. Their quesadillas in this place are just the best I've ever tasted. I mean, it's a meal for, like, it'll keep you full for the rest of the evening. But Raul knows how to do it right. It's a great story. He's a great dude, and I love the fact that we're here.
Yeah, me too. I had the fajita street tacos.
How were they?
Went a little different than I've normally had here, which I've never had a bad bite here.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Really good street tacos, which I didn't doubt Raul with a little street taco. He knows what to do. Today's championship parade special live broadcast presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. The Houston Astros are your World Series champs. And Academy Sports and Outdoors has everything you need to celebrate. Swing by your local Academy store today or shop online to find officially licensed jerseys, tees, caps, and more. The underlying question that we've had throughout the entire show today is what was your favorite moment during this World Series run, during this postseason run for the Houston Astros? And some people have weighed in. I have been avoiding reading them to this point. Jeremy Pena and the playoffs that he had after – look, a regular season that was a little up and down, going to a rookie behind a very popular player in this franchise that had huge postseason moments. People were a little curious how it would go, a little nervous how it would go.
Jeremy Pena dinged up a few times in the regular season. Yep.
He got off to a good start. He came out like, okay, this guy's got a shot to be pretty good. People are kind of evaluating his play. Like, oh, his defense is all right. Some people, you know, didn't think he's been great defensively at times. But then he heated up offensively after the All-Star break, like that month stretch he had post-All-Star break where he couldn't hit anything. He was terrible. Dusty moves him up to the two-hole. He comes to life a little bit towards the last part of the season, last month or two. And in the playoffs, he turned into a different player, was clutch, was outstanding. And Brendan played some of those home runs that he hit. I mean, you can go back to every series, and I think he ended up his playoffs like on an 8-game hitting streak, something like that. He was the only player to get a hit in every single World Series game. He hit a big home run in every single series. If you go back to the Seattle ALDS,
he hit the home run
in the 18th inning, the only run in that game where the Astros beat the Mariners 1-0 in Seattle. Yankees, game 4. You remember the Astros were down 3-0 in that game, and then all of a sudden, boom. Jeremy Pena hits the 3-run shot to tie the game.
That was the rain game. Yeah, they got off late. McCullers wasn't stellar. The Yankees jumped on him early. Thought, well, that might be the game that the Yankees are able to get from them. And then because of his bomb, he changed the complexion of the entire game.
Yeah, he hits the home run off Cortez, chases him out of the game as well. Yankees go to the bullpen. Astros sweep the Yankees out of the Bronx. And then he hit the home run as well in World Series Game 5, the Justin Verlander versus Noah Syndergaard game, where the Astros were trailing in that game. Jeremy Pena hits the home run. They were trailing in the first. Actually, it was tied. It was after the Schwarber home run. Pena gave them the lead in the fourth. They would never trail again. They would go on to win that game, ultimately win the World Series. I mean, a star is born throughout this entire playoff by Jeremy Pena being the man.
Here's the thing that I don't think Astros fans really realize is you could be a Carlos Correa supporter, and you don't have to be a Jeremy Pena hater. You had so many people that were so adamant that Correa's the man, he's our guy, he's been loyal here, we need him to stay here, pay the man, pay the man, pay the man. Well, when they didn't pay the man, then instantaneously we said, look, the tough thing for the kid is every single day there's going to be a ledger where they're comparing him and Correa, him and Correa. But from a fan perspective, because it's not Carlos Correa, it's never going to be good enough. So all of you that were on that bandwagon, it's okay to admit you were wrong, but you're a damn liar if you thought that the Cinderella story of his first year in Big League Baseball, his first ever appearance in Major League Baseball was this full season, and he was going to do what he did. It's one thing to say he's going to be in the top three or four in the AL Rookie of the Year balloting at the end of the year with those stints on the injured list. It's another thing to say with this playoff run, with the moments you just recapped, with the fact that he was the MVP of both the Championship Series and the World Series, that this guy in 1 year's time has solidified his place in Astros history, and also the fact that already going in now to next season and as it relates to the future, this is one of the dudes. Like, he isn't just a guy that we just said, be yourself, be a role player, fit in and around, you're surrounded by, you know, bookended by Bregman and Altuve. This dude has just gone from, I'm happy to be here, I'm in the big leagues, and I'm replacing a guy that's going to be tough, to, I don't want to say Carlos who, but they're already moved. Now fans are moved on saying this is one of our main dudes going forward. That's amazing.
I think it's safe to say that Pena is going to be one of the top 10 shortstops in baseball for like the next 10 years. What he brings to you defensively and then his power, I think he's going to have years where he might be like a top three shortstop.
Very possible.
And he's part of that young core that we were talking about earlier, that, you know, the Astros, they're not so much the old core that we knew whenever they started this dynasty, right? With Altuve and Correa and Springer, if you want to throw Lance McCullers into the mix there, you certainly can. You want to throw Yuli into the mix, you certainly can. This is part of the younger nucleus. Like, we've talked about the core four forever. I think you can look at the Astros currently as like kind of a young three with Yordan Alvarez, with Jeremy Pena, with Kyle Tucker, and that's before you even start talking about the pitching side of things. And Pena is very much part of that conversation. 4965, I completely admit I was too hard on Pena. He's really good in the field. Super glad that we have him. I mean, he led baseball in, like, defensive runs saved. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776, 6087. I know it's hard to know what happens in the future, but if he, Pena, continues to play like this, do you think we can let Pena walk like we did with Correa?
I mean, we don't know how it's all going to play out. You don't have to worry about it for quite some time. You've got him under team control. He's part of the young nucleus that's not going to cost you financially, you know, right off the jump. I think that they may pull a Bregman move, as you had suggested and we talked about earlier, in the fact that if he keeps doing this for the next year or two, that they'll have a serious discussion about taking care of him so he doesn't get away, so you do lock him up. But it depends on what numbers. That's always going to be the one that makes the most sense for this franchise, whether Click is the GM or not. We know how Crane operates. I think that, you know, again, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, or in a couple of years if they want to try and speed up the process and lock him up. But for the short term, as it relates to this dynasty going forward and the fact that they're not going anywhere and they can continue the sustained run that they're on, he's a big part of it, and he's going to be a big part of it. And that's the other thing that people need to get over is the fact he's not Carlos Correa, but guess what? He's not one of the guys that was here in 17 either, but he's part of a team that won a World Series. He was a major factor in it, and he's just getting started.
Yeah. Long term, like, probably a conversation for another day, but really quick. Pena is going to be one of those super two guys too, so they're not going to have 6 years of club control with him. It's only going to be five because he was up from the very start of this season. So you're looking at four more years of club control, but 5 years. Like, we just talked earlier about how many players are left from that 2017 team. Like, this is more than just one player. The Astros are a machine that reload and always have somebody ready to go to take the shoes and spot of somebody else who left big shoes to fill. So premature to have the conversation. I'm always a huge fan of trying to buy out a few years of their free agency, like Yordan Alvarez, like Lance McCullers, like Alex Bregman, like Jose Altuve. But the guys who don't do that, I mean, it's tough to pay. It's tough to pay and win at a high level, like George Springer, like Carlos Correa, like Gerrit Cole. So usually the guys that the Astros have success with are the guys that are willing to give up a few years of free agency and sign early. Maybe Pena will be that guy. We'll see. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees broadcasting live from Cobos Q, 2012 Rusk and Edo. Swing on by. Say hello to us. We'll be here for another half hour. Will House will be here until 7. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you one more time about our good friend Doc Linville. Look, Doc Linville is a game changer, and he's a game changer without ever playing a sport. He's a game changer because he can get your hair back. Fellas, if you're looking in the mirror and you're balding and you know that your forehead has become an 8-head or that baboon's butt is showing on the back of your head, you don't think there's anything you can do about it, and the sprays and the creams and the foams, that just masks it. It doesn't really take care of the problem. Go see my friend Doc Linville, because he's going to show you the Neograft procedure, and he can explain to you how that can get your real hair where you need it and change your entire outlook on your daily life and how you look at your appearance and your confidence. It is absolutely fantastic. Check him out by going to 975hair.com and make an appointment to go see him and his staff. It normally costs $150. For you as a loyal listener to ESPN 97.5, it's absolutely free. Then ask all the questions that you need answered before you consider the procedure. That is, how long does the procedure take? How long is the recovery time? How long until you see the full results? The biggest one that changed my mind, 95%+ of all the follicles moved are going to stay and grow and be with you for the rest of your life. That was all I needed. I went to him, and he changed my 8-head back into a 4-head. It has been absolutely fantastic. He can do the same kind of thing for you, too. 975hair.com. Go there and ask all the questions. They're the best in the business. It's Doc Linville at 975hair.com.
You are listening to...
Hey! Yeah, you! You better be listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Cobos Q and Edo. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
La pelota en dirección hacia el territorio del Jardín Central. Jordan Alvarez. A lo profundo.
Oh, Brendan's playing my love language now. The Spanish call of the greatest moment in Houston Astro history. The Jordan Alvarez three-run homer in the sixth, the go-ahead home run. Astros would go on to win their second World Series in franchise history. And you got a little tipping on four fours with the Spanish radio call.
That was fantastic.
That's Brendan's greatest bump back of all time.
Well, you were over there, and normally you guys are, like, conspiracizing what's coming up next. And I was like, hey, Jeremy's off mic. He goes, what do you think about the – we haven't played the Spanish radio call yet of Jordan. I'm like, yeah, that'd be pretty awesome. I'd like to hear it. That dude is very good. He's kind of made that his own, that long, drawn out. Sometimes when he's doing the ESPN games, he does the no.
That was my favorite part.
That's fantastic. Yeah. He does it like the ESPN music that da-na-na, is part of the call. It's a great call.
I wasn't sure if Jordan hit a home run or Messi scored a goal, but I loved it. I loved it.
That's true, too, with the World Cup coming up.
Yeah, that's a couple weeks away. I'm excited for that, too.
You know, again, we mentioned, and we have one of the experienced guys with us that likes to crap all over Dan Shulman, Sean Mapes. I don't understand it. I think, you know what, as much as I understand, like, Joe Davis is the Dodgers guy, but you know what? I love Smoltz. The knowledge and the information he brings you is fantastic. I think you could have done a lot worse with the national guys that called this. I think we're both big Brian Anderson fans. I thought Francoeur and Darling and Anderson were great. I thought that this World Series team was better than I had thought it was going to be. I love the studio show.
Yeah.
I think Astros fans got lucky with all the guys that they did get to listen to.
Yeah, I thought they're good. I thought they're. I like Smoltz. I think Smoltz can sound a little dry at times, which, I mean, I can live with because of his knowledge. But I can understand that, critique on Smoltz. I thought Joe Davis was very good. I mean, I didn't mind Buck. So, like, you get guys at that stage, they're usually really good. It's very easy to criticize people with that type of role and at that stage. But I think that they're all very good.
I think
good.
A lot of fans, when the call is something that happened big for the other team, always feel like there's bias.
Right.
You know, Joe Buck, where he went over the top, was the whole – how old is Soto every single time he was on screen
sure.
or did anything, and it got old. But overall, I think that, especially moving on from Joe Buck, which is difficult to do for Fox. I think they did well in doing what they did to get through this World Series.
I think a lot of times fans, I mean, you watch every game from a local perspective, at least Rockets, Astros, you don't from the NFL, but you get used to that. You get used to hearing it called for you, for that fan base.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a culture shock when all of a sudden it's a dude calling it right down the middle and gets excited both ways. Today's Championship Parade special live broadcast presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. The Houston Astros are your World Series champs, and Academy Sports and Outdoors has everything you need to celebrate. Swing by your local Academy store today or shop online to find officially licensed jerseys, tees, caps, and more. Also at Cobos Q, 2012 Rusk and Edo. Swing on by, say hello to us. A few minutes left to do that, but the Wheelhouse will be following us up. We'll be here until 7 o'clock at Cobos Q in Edo, which is fantastic. One question that somebody asked us before we get into remember we had the big argument, Yordan, Bryce Harper, a big debate there. I want to relive that here in a little bit.
That was best player in the series?
Yes, yes. 0921, does Brantley still have a spot on this team if he decides to come back? Here's an underrated moment of the World Series that had zero to do with anything that happened on the field, and we didn't find out about it until after the World Series was over. Michael Brantley had a win one for the Gipper speech, apparently, that he didn't like the approach of the offense after Game 3. And it's like, look, we lost 7-0. Like, who cares about the offense because you allow 7 runs to score? But Brantley's like, we did nothing offensively. We didn't get to their bullpen. We did zero today to help us win this series. He basically gave it to the Houston Astros. He got in there chilly. Michael Brantley, with the speech that a lot of people were crediting to turning the Astros offense around, and, in fact, they gave him the game ball in Game 4 because of that speech.
Wow. I was unaware, and good for Michael Mike for earning that money somehow after he got hurt. Look, we've talked about this previously on multiple occasions. Uncle Mike has a spot. He loves it here, and it just depends on the price. I think if Uncle Mike gives you a hometown discount to stay here and to keep playing for this team, you could find a way easily to put him back in left field, assuming he's healthy. Yordan back to designated hitter. You're just fine. And you know what? They were gonna look at the market anyway to see who was out there for outfielders. If Uncle Mike, right under their own nose, is still the steady 300 doubles hitting outfielder that he can be, and he knows Minute Maid Park and all the idiosyncrasies of the wall and everything, I'm fine bringing Uncle Mike back at the right price.
A couple of reasons of why I would bring Michael Brantley back. I do want Michael Brantley back. Now, shoulder injury for a dude who's in his late 30s can be concerning, but you would expect that to impact somebody who has more power, right? Like, if it was a 40 home run guy that's having shoulder surgery, I would expect a big drop in their production. Michael Brantley's never hit for power. Michael Brantley's a contact hitter. I don't think that the shoulder injury would have as much impact as a contact hitter as it would on a power hitter.
Especially, you're right. Especially, like, really digging in and swinging for the fences and trying to yank one out. That's when you can put a ton of undue pressure on your rotator and your shoulder.
Yeah.
The fact that, like you said, he's such a smooth swinger that's just trying to make contact. Look, when this offense was struggling to start the season and no one was hitting up to par, first guy to hit 300 was Brantley, and then he continued to do it until he got hurt.
Secondly, you need a left fielder. Like, you have to have a left fielder going into next year. I don't think Yordan Alvarez is an everyday left fielder. You could do the same thing that you were doing this year where they were basically alternating games in left field. One guy's your left fielder, one guy's your DH, with the idea of kind of keeping them both fresh and left but also trying to keep them as healthy as possible for a couple of players who are injury-prone. The other, the free agency market in left field is not very good either. It's like Andrew Benintendi, Joey Gallo, and Michael Brantley. Like, just give me Michael Brantley.
That's fine.
Andrew Benintendi is going to be more expensive than Brantley, and Andrew Benintendi at his best is Michael Brantley. The other thing that swings this maybe more than anything else, there's a new rule next year in Major League Baseball where teams can no longer shift.
Yep.
The shift negatively impacts Michael Brantley almost more than anybody else in baseball. You know, the worst is Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker is the worst.
No, I know he is the worst, but I'm saying in that lineup, you already got two guys that were punished every single time they didn't get a ball somewhat elevated because of the shift.
Give me Michael Brantley, who this year was hitting 300, getting on base 37% of the time, in a year where there is no shift. I'll roll the dice that he might not be healthy with the reward that he could be healthy, and he's going to have a year where the defense isn't allowed to shift him. I'm all for the idea of bringing back Michael Brantley.
Too. I really am. And look, if he adds that kind of extra leadership, we all know the Uncle Mike and the relationship he had with Springer, but if he has it with the whole team, if the young guys have someone that they can actually, you know, pick the brain of when they're thinking about things hitting-wise or otherwise or just experience in the major league-wise, and you've got a guy that's still getting it done and getting results that's also capable of being that Uncle Mike to all these younger players that they continue to run through the system, just another advantage for the Astros and another reason reason why you bring him back. Price is going to matter, but if he doesn't want to price himself out, and he also is honest about himself and factoring in coming off the shoulder surgery at his age, like you said, then I think they can work something out, and I don't think it's going to take too long.
All right, before the World Series started, Major League Baseball had their rankings, best players in this series. They listed Bryce Harper ahead of Yordan Alvarez. We questioned that on the air. We got into it with Greg Frank, our sports map guy who's from Philadelphia, which I hope he's doing all right. I hope we checked in.
Yeah, we haven't really seen
Greg
him.
Frank today. Hope he's well. Can we discuss that again? Bryce Harper probably had I haven't even looked at the numbers on this. I bet you Bryce Harper had a better statistical World Series than Yordan did. Yeah, he hit 350,
he did.
1,100 OPS.
Yep.
Yordan hit sub 200, 730, 4 OPS. Who put his team on the back and who didn't?
Yeah, look, I mean, look, and a lot of it is, you know, how you're pitched, but it's a lot on the manager and the team to decide if you're going to pitch to him. And the Astros made a business decision about two or three games into the series that they weren't going to, Bryce Harper was going to see as many good pitches. They kind of changed that philosophy midstream as they got into the game the other night, where they actually tried to attack him, and with guys that have overpowering fastballs that can get it up in the zone and they can locate their breaking pitches. Bryce Harper's human too, and Bryce Harper struggles with a lot of those pitches too. I mean, you can have the conversation over here. He carried his franchise. There's no doubt about it. He carried him all year. But in a lot of ways, Yordan didn't have to, but when they needed him to step up, he did too. So it's a conversation worth having. You know, everybody had already anointed Bryce Harper the MVP in the Phillies, you know, World Series run and all this stuff, but it didn't work out that way.
I'll ride with Yordan. I'll ride with Yordan. His numbers weren't even that good. Like, his numbers weren't good in the World Series. They really weren't very good after Game 2 of the ALDS. He kind of has a knack for the moment, doesn't he? Doesn't it seem like he has a knack for the moment?
He clutched up when he had to clutch up. And Bryce Harper also did for the Phillies. No question about it.
He didn't so much in the World Series.
But you're also talking about a guy that's going to have another surgery so he can throw the baseball again. He had a broken thumb. They won 87 games, but he missed 57 games. If he plays 57 more games, that team flirts with 100 easy. And he was the main reason. And you look at that lineup and say, look, for everything that you like to see Josh Donaldson coming up for the Yankees because he was a zero, Castellanos and Rhys Hoskins were basically zeros for this team with the exception of the one game Philly won in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was all on Schwarber and it was all on Bryce Harper. You can hate his demeanor and all this, the golden child, and how Sports Illustrated anointed him when he was 16 and all along the way and his big contract, but the fact is he's a hell of a baseball player.
They're both really good. Like, kind of.
He's a better outfielder when healthy than Yordan.
I think they're both elite. I think they're both elite offensive players when it's all said and done. The one thing about Castellanos, he did save game one, though. Without Nick Castellanos,
catch,
if he doesn't make that catch, Astros win this series in five.
Yep, he made a couple of catches in the playoffs. Look, it's the same way we said when guys that hadn't done anything were put on center stage, they made the big play. Obviously, Trey Mancini was the guy at first base that made that play. Castellanos didn't do anything offensively. He made two diving catches in the playoffs that helped them immensely.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live, Cobos Q in Edo, 2012 Rush Street. Will House will be here until 7. The party, the celebration, the overflow from the parade going on here inside of Cobos Q. Let's keep it going all the way until 7 o'clock with the Will House as well. What is your favorite moment of this World Series run for the Astros? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Yo, fellas, y'all ready to do this?
What's up, guys?
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Cobos Q in Edo. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The 1-2 to Schwarber with the runner going, hit down to first, and a great stop by Mancini, and he stands up and steps on the bag. That ball was ripped, but Mancini with a tough short hop right in front of the base and then stepped on the bag for an enormous out for the Houston Astros.
Woo!
And the inning is over.
Was that Eduardo Perez?
It was Eddie Perez.
Eddie stepping all over Schulman. My goodness.
Well, and then from the not only did he smother the baseball, he also smothered the bag. I mean, he just made sure he was using every bit of his body to make sure that ball didn't get by, and once it did, he touched the base.
I thought Mancini had the best explanation of that play. He said he tackled the ball.
He kind of did.
He kind of just went right at it and smothered it and tackled it and tapped the bag. Cody Stutes hanging out with us inside of 2012 Rush. Cobo's Q and Edo, great spot to hang out. The afterflow from the parade is here. The party is continuing. A great time. Of course, today's championship parade special live broadcast presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. The Houston Astros are your World Series champs, and Academy Sports and Outdoors has everything you need to celebrate. Swing by your local Academy store today or shop online to find officially licensed jerseys, tees, caps, and more. Cody, I think Yordan Alvarez's home run, greatest Astro moment in franchise history. Some people are saying that it could be the greatest moment in Houston sports history. Perhaps a conversation and a debate for a different day. A ton of memories and ton of moments in this entire playoff run that stand out. Yordan had three homers. Pena had a bunch of home runs as well. You had a no-hitter. You had a no-hitter in the World Series. Like, it's incredible. That the Astros were able to do that. What are some of the favorite moments that you've had in this World Series run for the Astros?
So we will actually go through this tomorrow on the show, and we will do what we call the Wheelhouse Storyline Gauntlet. And okay. We will take the moments throughout the course of the entire playoff run. Everybody will nominate a moment, and it's this moment versus that moment. And the winner advances to face the next
tournament.
We're going to do that tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
The bracket challenge?
Yeah, it kind of, sort of, but like if you win, you stay on.
It's a gauntlet match.
Yeah, it's like pick up hoops. You win, you stay on.
Yeah.
So that's basically what we're kind of doing with that tomorrow. So basically all the moments, this is good prep for this for tomorrow.
We're doing that tomorrow on the Killer Bees, too.
Yeah,
so
we're
going
to do
cool.
it first.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, we told everybody we're going to do it, so if you guys want to copy us, it's great. I feel like it's a good segment idea.
Paul Gallant's actually going to do it
tomorrow. Paul
might
do it first. Yeah.
We're also going to do Headlines of the Crazy, which is something that's never done on the station before. It's nothing like News of the Weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Renato might be doing that tomorrow morning.
Yeah. it's tough to not have Yordan involved because Yordan was involved in some of these seminal moments from this run, and I really enjoyed the walk-off to start the run. That's what I think, to me, is the one that's going to stand out the most. I like Javier as well and what he brought to the table with the no-hitter. That's not all him, though, because you got to factor in a couple of the other guys. So it's tough to narrow it down. I'd start with Yordan's walk-off against Seattle because it felt like Seattle jumped on Justin Verlander so early, and you're like, oh, my God, are they going to be able to come back? And you know, Bregman hits that home run to get you close, and then Yordan steps up with a chance to win, and he does.
Here's a crazy thought that I had the other day, because I think people are totally – not that you were doing this, but hearing you say Javier, you know, wasn't only him, which it's not. I mean, it was combined no-hitter with four different pitchers. Do you think Javier gets more praise for what he did in the World Series nationally, not locally, because I think we appreciate and respect it, you know, the first World Series no-hitter since Don Larsen way back in the 50s? Do you think that nationally Christian Javier's start would have been looked at more favorably if he gave up one hit? If he went six innings, one hit, shutout baseball, instead of the combined no-hitter where everybody the next day were saying, oh, it's not the same as a complete game no-hitter. Oh, that's not a real no-hitter. The conversation became more about where does this stand in terms of real no-hitters than it did Christian Javier flat-out dominating in a World Series game.
No, I don't think it changes it. I don't think it's better because the expectation was if you had to play seven, that guy's coming in there and giving you exactly that again for the two or three innings that they can give you in seven. So kind of let the momentum sit for a couple of days that, well, you know what, if you do get to seven, you got to face Javier again for at least a couple of innings, maybe to start the game. So how do you feel about that, Philadelphia? The momentum coming out of that, like, if you're divvying up all the platitudes for how that worked, he obviously gets the most.
You know what, here's the interesting question. I thought that's where you were going with this. But do you think that Christian Javier got more credit because of the no-hitter overall for what he did in the playoffs than Framber Valdez? Because I think that Framber almost kind of unintentionally got overlooked for as great as he was because he did give up some hits. He did give up a home run here or there. But it was greatness the way he was able to attack the zone and hitters and get guys out over and over and over again.
Coming off of two losses, too.
Yeah.
Coming off the first loss in game two and then coming off with the chance to close it down, knowing that if you go to seven, it's tense, it's anybody's ball game type thing.
But I'm saying, think about what he did to the Yankees.
Yep.
Think about, you know, all the different things he did throughout the playoffs and and against the Mariners. And you're like, you know what? This dude was dealing the entire playoffs, but because Javier was part of the no-hitter and did what they needed him to do and didn't give up a hit, he almost seems to get more credit. Not that either guy is wrong.
Framber overshadowed by another pitcher yet again, just like he was in the regular season by JV and the postseason by Javier. And thank goodness that guy's on our team.
Yeah. That's right.
I think Fromber's volume helps his case, though, right? You know, winning three playoff games. And I don't think Fromber is getting the love nationally as he should, but, I mean, the dude was unbelievable the entire postseason.
So I've asked this before, and I never really got clear. Do you know how they vote for the World Series MVP? Because if it's like the Heisman Trophy where you put 1, 2, and 3, what would your 1, 2, or 3 for the World Series MVP have been?
My 1, 2, 3?
Your 1, 2, 3 on the World Series MVP. Like, if you had a ballot and you were voting.
Who's a tough choice?
I don't think they do it this way. I think they all just write down one name.
If I understand correctly, it's only one name.
Yeah, but if there
it's
was a one
name and it has to be done
by
before
like
the yeah, it's like right after the inning happened where Yordan hit the bomb.
So if you were doing a 1, 2, 3 on World Series MVP, what would your ballot be?
I have a hot take. I'd have Pena third.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd have Jeremy Pena third. Who? Second would be Ryan Pressly. And first would be Fromber Valdez.
Okay. So you would have voted for Fromber.
Yeah, I don't think you could turn the other way on Pena. I think Pena, to me, you know, when I first start thinking about it in that final game, I always – what's the first thing that pops into my head? And Pena just did too much consistently throughout this series. But I think two is a tough conversation because, like you just said, Yordan didn't hit for average. Yordan hit the big bomb. But Fromber was steady as he could be. And Christian Javier was part of a no-hitter and did everything they asked him to do. So, I mean, I think it would be Pena, then it would be Fromber, and then it would be Javier / Yordan, maybe?
I would go Pena, Pressly, Brian Abreu.
Pena, Pressly.
Abreu's not a bad
– Brian Abreu.
You can't go wrong with either guy. Pressly was lights out. No matter what we saw during the regular season and velocity down and can't go back-to-back days, he was everything they needed him to be and more. And Abreu elevated everything from where he was in the regular season, took a massive step forward.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because, like, he doesn't have the saves. Pressly has the two saves. Abreu appeared in 5 games in the series, too. I thought that's more than I thought. I thought it was 4 for some reason.
How many off the top, are you looking at his stats right now?
I'm looking at Pressly's.
Okay. I was going to say, how many strikeouts did Abreu have? Because it felt like he
in the World Series
felt like he struck
10.
Out basically everybody.
I assume we've talked about Montero's going to leave at the end of the year and get more money somewhere. I assume you pencil Abreu into the 8th inning next year.
Probably.
And he's your eventual closer.
Peter Gammons tweeted last week that the Astros still view him as a potential starter.
They used to. I'm not sure
anymore.
They still do. The thing about Abreu that I don't hate him above Pressly, even though Pressly has the saves. Abreu more often than not was getting the heart of the order, whereas Pressly wasn't always.
Was.
So I think that's a really good call. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse today?
Lots of talk about the World Series and some of the moments that stand out, how great it is. I will try to work in over the course of the entire show something about every single player that played a game for the Astros.
Little Easter egg on the Wheelhouse.
Yes.
Very good. We'll be
Corey
listening.
Corey Lee was active. Does he count?
I'll have to get something in about Corey Lee, too.
Right. Thanks to Brennan for doing all the hard work today. Sean Mapes and BMAC tag teaming with our on-site engineering here at Cobos Q. Swing on by here. Hang out with the Wheelhouse. They'll be here until 7. For Blank on Branham, we'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. And Brendan's going to take us home the rest of the way.
Alvarez launches deep right field, and this one is gone, and the Astros walk him off in game one.
And he swings and lifts one in the air deep to left field. He'll watch it fly. Jeremy Pena, one swing of the bat, and the Astros tie it at 3. Judge on the crowd. Presley's got it. Easy flip. Ball game over, and the Houston Astros win the American League pennant.
And the 2-1 pitch to Alvarez is swinging the ball, hit to center field, and hit well. Barely back. It is gone! Straight away center field, hit a ton. And Yordan Alvarez breaks out of it with a 3-run homer to give the Astros a 3-1 lead. There goes the runner as Castellanos pops it up down the right field line. Tucker into foul territory. He's got it. And that'll do it. The Houston Astros have won the World Series as they take game 6 by a score of 4-1. And they celebrate their second title in the last 6 seasons. And this time, they do it at home.